This is a podcast from ABC Overnights. Here's Trevor Chappell.
Air pollution, land pollution, light pollution, noise pollution, thermal pollution, visual pollution, and water pollution. They're all the different types of pollution. How have they impacted in your life at some time? And what are the reasons for it? And how does it make you feel when those things impact on your life? You may not have come across any of those things until you went to a city or travelled overseas. And which place was it that you first came across those things? And did it make you realise how lucky you are? Rhys Holter is our Earth Doctor. Hello, Rhys.
G'day, Trevor. How are you going?
Good. Seven types of pollution. Air, land, light, noise, thermal, visual and water. And I guess they've all impacted on us some ways over the years.
Yeah, they have. The biggest question, Trevor, to you, to the audience, is why is it acceptable that there's pollution? Why?
And what does and what's causing the pollution in itself? And how is it that we actually do something about all of the different types of pollution?
Yeah, and what about this? The real wealth of a nation lies in its soil, air, fresh water, wildlife, forests, and oceans.
And the thing is that all of the types of pollution that there are, I guess, are caused by us, and we are the ones that are making the impact on those things that you just mentioned.
And then there's an awfully large industry that's capitalizing on that, right? When you're sick, what do you have to do? So it's rather an incestuous circle, like a dog chasing his tail, perhaps, yeah?
Now, one of the reasons that I wanted to ask people about how it has actually impacted on them and when they have seen it and they've discovered it for the first time in some ways is because it shines a light on perhaps what it is. When you don't really ask the question of how does it impact on me or what are the things that I see. It's interesting, I got a text here from Peter in Noble Park. He said, I went to LA in the 1990s and I could see the air pollution. I could see the air. It was brown. It was terrible. And that's one of the things that if you've never seen pollution before, when you go to a big city for the first time and you see it from a distance, you see pollution for the first time.
Yeah, it also highlights how exquisite the countryside is. There's less people and in little communities and therefore less pollution. Yeah?
1-300-800-222 is the number to call. We'll go through a few. When I went to Thailand for the first time was the first time I've ever come across rubbish in the water. And in the ocean, and it really it amazed me, Rhys, because I'd come from beautiful beaches in Australia, and I'd never seen a plastic bag, really seen plastic or stuff in the water that touched me, and like you could feel rubbish in the water, and it was shocking. It was the first time that sort of pollution has ever impacted on me.
Yeah, and Trevor, sadly, it's not just there, mate. It's now. We could go through a host of countries, and I'm not going to select any which one, but throughout Southeast Asia and into Europe. The necropsies, the autopsies of animals, the 30 sperm whales that were spat up in Northern Europe in January, epic. 13 of them were, their insides were examined, and they were all blocked with plastic.
Rob joins us. Good morning, Rob.
When the gentleman was talking about air pollution, water pollution, I mean, anyone that is, I don't forget the first time I went to Hong Kong, and they had a special type of barge that used to scoop up all the waste in the bay, Hong Kong Bay, because it was just unbelievable. And if you've ever been to Kuala Lumpur, I mean, in the morning, the smog is so thick, it's unbelievable.
See, you hear of people who go to China for the first time where people wear masks.
Yeah.
And for us, it's, I mean, you realise how lucky we are. I can't imagine having to go to a country and wear a mask around every day.
I catch a lot of public transport because I've got to get into the city and it's so easy to catch public transport. And a lot of people I've noticed on the trains, we're particularly like Asian descent, wear masks because of the pollution we've got in Sydney. I mean, I go to Melbourne and Brisbane a lot as well, but the thing is, to me, I just get used to it. I mean, I never really worried about it when I was in Asia and whatever, but I mean, I suppose other people are more sensitive to it.
But also, possibly, Rob, more aware because they're used to it in their country and they recognise it in other countries.
Yeah, we probably just don't realise. I mean, I'd like a doctor to phone up and say, look, we're starting to see more restricting, you know, like... people with chest complaints for the pollution that's going on in around our country. I mean, because it's just one of those things. But what I found out was about contaminated land. You know, we were fortunate to be made. I was broke buying contaminated land. It's worth nothing. No one wants it. You go to the council, you get a BA and a DA, you remediate it, and then you can unsell it.
But this is contaminated by what, Rob?
Oh, well, the easiest one was hydrocarbons. You know, when you see a petrol station.
Oh, yeah.
Right, they got leaching because even though they've got the tanks there on the petrol station, they do have leaching of the petroleum goes into the ground.
So did you buy contaminated land?
Yeah.
And
you get it for nothing.
But isn't that, don't you have, were you told that it was contaminated?
Yeah, I love it.
Like, why?
Because there was a block of land at the moment I'm still haggling over down in Hunter's Hill. That, you know, your watches with radium that glow in the dark, right? Still arguing about that particular site at the moment. It's got you look straight down Sydney Harbour. The land's priceless, but it's contaminated.
And so what? Do you get it as a discount?
Yeah, but who wants contaminated land?
Yeah, but do you?
Well, yeah, mate, I'm just a dumb Irish Catholic. When I was broke, I had to come up with some other idea to make some money.
Okay, but the thing is, can you decontaminate it, or is it dangerous?
No, it's not. It's not that difficult. There's some things you can and some things you can't.
Okay.
I mean, heavy metals and asbestos are a bit of a pain in the posterior.
Yeah.
But hydrocarbons aren't that difficult. I mean, you know, pesticide. Things like that. A very good friend of mine taught me a lot about it, and it's terrible to say someone's a world expert, but this guy was in what he did. And he created bacteria.
Okay, no, you've got to be quick because I've got a lot of people to talk to.
No, but what you do is this stuff, you juice it up and you make it on site, and it just eats up the chemicals. Like being fertilised, I can imagine a fertiliser plant.
No, I've got to go, but I don't know if I'd want to buy contaminated soil or contaminated land. But I know, east of the road. But that's another thing, Reece, is that we forget about the effect that we have on land itself, and especially when we use it for factories and use it for all sorts of things.
Oh, yeah, and just back to the other thing, you know, 4,400 people a day in China die of airborne pollution. And don't forget, each year for about 4 months, the Indonesian fires in the palm oil plantations last year reached an epic where 5 million people in Southeast Asia couldn't breathe, Trevor. So, yeah, no, this is all, and it's being exacerbated by the climate crisis. So it's all around us.
But it's a good point. It'd be interesting to find out the effects that pollution have on our respiration system and how it affects us. Apparently, a lot of Asian people wear masks to stop spreading germs when they have the flu. And it's actually a respect thing that you will wear. They wear masks if they have the flu or a cold. That's interesting in itself.
Excellent. Yeah, it is.
Let me see. Wayne, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I can't handle the light pollution. I live northeast of Melbourne between the King Lake National Park and the Yarra River. And I used to be able to say when I came over KG Hill, I used to be able to say to friends and people, see that black? I live in the middle of that. Whereas now when you come over the hill, you see speckles of lights. Where I live here, I've got a never-ending sunset. To the southwest at night, there's this just huge glow to the west. And I think, oh my goodness, all that fossil fuel to create that light? And why are those lights on, you know? And now, a neighbour, I used to be able to look out my window and I'd see no lights. I've never connected to the grid because I just, Victorian power, you know, like it must be the most primitive form of making energy, you know, it's all basically fossil fuels.
The light pollution's an interesting one, though, especially if you live near a city and you cannot escape it.
Well, you can't see the stars, for a start. I'm lucky I can see stars. But where I live, I've got feathertails and sugar gliders and fascicles, all these, you know, nocturnal arboreal marsupials.
They'd be confused.
And I wonder how on earth they can handle it, because if I'm driving along the road and there's one light on a hill, your eyes just pull to it. Or if you're looking at a big view, your eyes pull to the light. They don't pull to the dark. And I wonder how on earth is that affecting all the animals, let alone the fossil fuels we're burning up to create the light.
Our Earth Doctor, Dr. Rhys Halter, is with us. Rhys, we were just talking about light pollution there and the effect that it has on us.
Yeah, well, it's not good. Let me put it to you this way. The CIA figured out how to crack anybody. You subject them to full light for more than 24 hours, and you play scintillating music, probably heavy metal, on about 9. And you'll break a human being. You'll break the toughest James Bond-esque spy. So that's at an extreme, but light and sound will snap anybody.
So does that mean we've got a whole lot of very dazed possums walking around because they don't know if it's day or night or what's going on?
Yeah, well, it's the critters that are getting copping it hard, Trev. Particularly, as we know, as Aussies and anybody in Tassie knows, the roadkill is shocking. When the critters see the light, they're mesmerized and they stop dead in their tracks and they just get schmoed by the vehicles on the road. Roadways here, it's like a Bambi. It's a little deer on the freeway or the I, as we call it, the interstate, and they get on there and they just freeze, and then they're done. It's tragic, really.
You know, I can't remember what I was reading or looking at the other day because you were talking about plastics. They were talking about, you know, the tiny, tiny little microscopic plastics that they put in like facial scrubs.
Yeah.
That amazed me, that story, because I don't know if people are aware.
And in all our fleeces, Trev, all our fleece, either blankets or hoodies or the fleece tops, each time they're washed, at least 2,000 microfibers are so small, they go down the drain through the water system, they go through the cleansing process, and they're so small, they go right through the filtration system, and they're emptied into lakes and rivers and our oceans. And in such high numbers, they're turning up in lugworms on the bottom of the ocean. They're turning up inside oysters, and they're turning up inside some fish. And those tiny little particles are petroleum-based particles, and they're perfect sponges attracting the most heinous chemicals in the water, DDT, methylmercury from burning coal, all of the different insecticides, the PCBs, and on it goes. And in nature, in the different levels of the food chain, as the predator eats the prey, the poisons, what we call biomagnify, up the food chain. So by the time they get to a dolphin or a whale or a human being or an eagle, an apex predator, they can be 100,000 times stronger than when they first landed in the lugworm or the oyster or the fish.
We're talking about how pollution directly affects us. A good point here from Michelle in DeReal, who says, when we lived in Geelong, less than a kilometre from the Shell refineries, my boys had to use Ventolin twice a day, every day. After we moved to our 5-acre block in the bush, they didn't need it ever again. And I totally agree with the caller before about light. We can see the glow of Ballarat in one direction and the even bigger glow of Geelong in the other direction. Jack, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, Jack.
Pollution. that built the Elizabeth Quay on top of an old rubbish tip where the night carts used to empty when night carts used to go around Laverton. I don't know whether you know what they were.
Oh, yeah, we know about night carts, yep.
Yeah, well, there was big ponds down there, and it was being overfilled with town rubbish, household rubbish. I worked on it from the corner of the bridge to push all the rubbish over there. This was stopped in the 1970s, and now they're complaining about pollution, human feces in the river, in the corbs are stopping swimming, and this, that, and the other. They have now released all this into the Swan River by building Elizabeth Quay and a cove in there.
Oh, so what you're saying is that that was where they used to dump sewage, and now they've got a redevelopment. They've dug it all up again.
Yes, it was in the it was a lot before the 1960s when I had dealings with it.
Mm.
Before Perth wasn't a million population in West Australia when I came here. And that's what is released into the river now.
See, Jack, this is where we think that we cover things up, or there are ways to hide the pollution that we do, but sometimes it comes back and bites us on the backside.
Well, this is what's happening with Elizabeth Quay. They're going to have a lot of trouble there until they waken up to the fact what they've done. And, they can't close Elizabeth Quay very much, but they can alter the swimming events and recreation events for people.
Actually, Jack, thank you. This is one of the things, Reece, where it affects pollution affects us in our everyday lives, is when we can't go swimming in the places that we used to, that we can't do the things that perhaps people used to swim in the Swan River, in lots of places, perhaps down the bottom of the Swan River as well, but they can't do that anymore, or not the same way as they used to. You can't fish the same in the rivers as you used to.
Yeah, it's a huge concern, and I mean, at the end of the day, what we do to the rivers and the lakes and the air and the soil and the land and all of the animals, Trev, we do to ourselves. So this is, and it's a very interesting thing. This dates back to the 1700s and the forefathers of my least favorite subject on planet Earth, which is economics. And the economists in the 1700s, when the Earth was a big, mostly unexplored globe of heaven, they came up with this notion of externality. And an externality, for a little guy like me who studies animals and works for nature, is something that a company X that is digging in the Earth for a mineral. And to get the mineral, they pollute the land and the water and the air. And the pollution for the economists is called an externality. And an externality is no big deal because technically, unless you're caught, nothing happens. And then you pay a fine. And this gets back to my first comment. Why is it acceptable that we are creating any pollution? Because if you look at nature, the most perfect, flawless system on our globe, there's no unemployment. Everybody works and has a very important role, and there's no pollution.
I love that idea that everybody works and has an important role. It's so true. Petra, good morning.
Yeah, actually, I heard that guy. Unbelievable, eh?
Yeah.
Why would they have a dump site in the city? Because it's right near the Yarra River. And,
oh, no, that was the Swan River, though, Petra, that he was talking about.
Yeah, the Swan River is actually where the Elizabeth Quays is.
Yeah. No, yeah, so you said the Yarra River, that was all.
Oh, no. That was my...
Oh, something went a little bit bonkers there.
Hmm.
Don't know what happened there, Petra, but thank you. Keith, good morning.
Oh, sorry, I just heard a blah, 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 blah.
Oh, no, it went a bit mad then, didn't it?
Mate, yeah, I just thought it was...
Do you know what it is, Keith?
The UFO from Whitecliff.
No. Do you know what it is? Because we've got Reece on, it's the CIA.
Oh, no, it's just... no, seriously, I told you, I lived in the spring.
NSA.
Oh, no, time gap thing.
Sorry, what was that, Keith?
I lived in, well, I'm a Territorian. I'm from Alice Springs. It's that Pine Gap thing.
Yeah, which is the peppercorn lease.
Well, one of them. I used to test drive the UFOs. But anyway, I'm not talking about that.
That could.
Good. I've actually was serious, Trevor, but every time you take me call, you make me fucking laugh.
It's all right. What did you want to talk about, Keith?
Mate, it's just I'm from the bush. I was born in Sydney, but at 17 I moved out and never moved back. And then Queensland, Northern Territory, you know, we don't have problems with pollution, you know. But you know why we don't have problems with pollution? We don't have the population.
Keith, you make a very good point, because some of the major problems associated with all of these pollutions is population.
Mate, one of the best men I really look up to, he flies helicopters a lot, and I can't remember his name, you know, Jans Benjamot or something.
You know. Dick Smith.
Yes, that's him. Yep. But you know what, my PTSD is getting bad for me. So I can't remember everybody's bloody nuts. But anyway, him. Yeah, and I hope he goes well in politics, because basically he has always said it's population. And you and me and everybody that is listening knows that everything goes for a boom and bust. Now, the humans will go through a boom and bust. And we're at the moment in the boom, but we're going to get bust. So the all natural tragedies of the economists are the only ones making money out of global warming.
You've made a couple of good points, and we'll go back to Reese with those. Reese, I know that overpopulation is something that you like to talk about as well, but the population and the impact that we have on everything to do with the environment has got a direct correlation with population.
Yeah, absolutely. We're adding 100 million human beings a year, and this notion of infinite expansion and growth is ridiculous. And interestingly, back to the air, because here's my philosophy. When children are born on our planet, I believe that it's their birthright to have fresh air, fresh water, healthy oceans, healthy forests, and healthy soils. What we do know is that over the last 20-plus years, because of our insatiable demand for more products means more energy. More energy currently has been fossil fuels. And when we burn more fossil fuels, we are disrupting not only the atmosphere, but actually the oxygen content has been lowered and lowered. We've lost almost 600 molecules of oxygen per 1 million over the last couple of decades. Now, it's not enough currently to bother us on a daily basis while we're awake, but I put it to you this, Trevor. Many of the listeners don't sleep as well as they did 10, 20 years ago. And part of that is because the oxygen levels are decreasing. And so I'm going to close the loop. The loop is this. With the oceans have been supercharged, particularly over the last 20 years. My colleagues at Lawrence Livermore here in California have done the math. They're highfalutin. They reckon that the amount of energy that the oceans have absorbed from us and our insatiable demand for more products is the equivalent of one Hiroshima-esque atom bomb going off every second for 75 consecutive years. What does this mean to the average person? Well, it means this. The oceans, the cold currents aren't rising as much as they used to, and in some cases not at all. When they don't rise, Trevor, they don't carry nitrogen and iron. Nitrogen and iron feed the phytoplankton, the plants, at the very foundation of the entire oceanic process. Those plants
along with a blue-green algae, give each of us, no matter where you live on planet Earth, they give each of us almost 2 out of every 3 breaths of air. We're missing 40% of the plants that give us oxygen. In come my friends, the whales and dolphins. Their poo is rich in iron and nitrogen. The whales, dolphins, and porpoises are giving us more of the phytoplankton, more oxygen. For heaven's sakes, all nations that are killing whales, dolphins, and porpoises, Japan, Iceland, Norway, and Denmark, they got to cut it out right now. That's our air.
Because we need our poo. Their poo.
We need our oxygen. I need oxygen. I don't sleep, mate.
Karen, good morning.
PC.
Yes, Karen.
Hello.
Hello.
Gosh, I love Dr. Reese. It just, this is Dr. Karen.
Hi, Dr. Karen.
I think everything that needs to be said is already been said, pretty much.
Do you want to add something?
Oh, I can add lots.
Just one? Yeah.
Noise pollution.
Yep.
What's classed as low-level ground noise? Is anything but? And I had to leave the residence unresolved. What we managed to work out was that there were two things happening. There was an upgrade in the road locally, bituminizing, and the storm gully traps were redone, and there was no insulation. So the storm water pipes that fed back into the street, up a block away into where we were, we became like an amplifier for it.
Oh, so you were getting like that constant noise.
It was hellish. Yeah. And you couldn't be in there. It went 24/7. And there was no resolution. And we left. We left in the end. There's more to this than what I'm mentioning.
But it's because nobody's mentioned noise pollution. It's something worth talking about. Karen, thank you. Because I've got to move on to some more people. Noise pollution is a horrendous thing, Reese. Whether it be noise pollution at extreme levels or just things like that, just continuous rumbling noises. I've never had to suffer with it because I've sort of lived out of town.
Yeah, and the background noises are going to go up, Trev. On my website, drreese.com, yesterday I did an interesting piece on Australian Post. And there's a movement afoot over the next decade to begin full scale to deliver packages currently under, Imperial 3 pounds, what's that, 1.3 kilos, but it'll go up to 5 pounds, 2 kilos. The drones, Aussie Post is using drones in Dandenong South to 50 homes currently. And they're delivering online shopping. Right?
Get
out. Is the craze. Come to me site. I did a podcast yesterday.
Yeah.
50 homes are being serviced in Melbourne, and twice a week the drones are coming and dropping off online packages. But here's the thing. What about all the birds and the bats that are going to get dispatched by these things? And it's a big deal because here in America, each year we lose almost 14,000 birds to airplanes. We now, at Chrissy last year, 400,000 drones were given as gifts. There's a couple million drones in America now that at any one time could occupy airspace. The UK in the last couple of days just issued new laws protecting people and airplanes from drones. But what about our birds and bats? And I'll tell you why I'm very bullish on the birds and bats, because they are certain species of birds are incredible mosquito eaters. And as the temperatures are rising, and you all know this, particularly in the top half, dengue, and not sure if malaria is at the top end, but elsewhere in the world, it's spreading north and south. as temperatures rise. We need the birds and bats.
And people who work night shift during the day, we don't need more noise like drones buzzing around everywhere. We've got enough things to deal with, like rubbish trucks and lawn mowers and leaf blowers.
Leaf blowers.
Yeah. Neil, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, Neil.
Just thinking of Perth, so short of water, we've got the Jandakot Mound that's polluted with aviation fuel from the Jandakot Airport. Which is a pretty busy airport now, and that's one of the main supplies of underground water. And north of the city, we have the Jandakot Mound, which is pumped dry by horticultural people irrigating their crops. And we're now going to actually tip the grey water back into that mound to try and get some water back out and cleaned so we can then drink.
Water is such a huge issue. Yeah.
And our dams don't actually get rain over them anymore.
See,
I wonder why they've moved.
Do you remember? I remember when they had problem with in the estuary at Mandurah. Greece mentioned blue-green algae because of the fertilisers coming down from the river and settling into the Mandurah estuary.
Yeah,
and they had to put the cut in.
The sandy soil there doesn't hold fertiliser.
Yeah, and they had to put the cut in. So they actually, what they did was they cut a dirty, great big section of land out and reconnected it to the ocean. So that the ocean came in and flushed out the water and reduced the blue-green algae. And it worked, didn't it, Neil?
Slightly. I don't think it's really cured it.
Yeah.
Because you're still putting the fertilizer on the farmers. They're still doing dairy farming around that area.
Yeah, you can try and flush it out as much as you like, but you're still not solving the problem. Good on you, Neil. Thank you. And I know that had a big effect in the estuary because it then affected the crabs. It affected all of the recreational fishing that everybody did. It sounded like Reese just dropped out. We'll see if we can get him back again. That cut was an incredibly good idea and a pretty good feat of engineering. I don't know how successful it was. You might be able to tell me about that. But I remember it being done and that it was it was thought to be successful in flushing blue-green algae out of there. If you want to join us, 1-300-800-222.
iView means your ABC is always with you. Hey, how are you?
Good.
Hey, honey, Charlie Pickering's in our bathroom.
With a huge variety of your favourite Aussie shows ready when you are. You decide what to watch, when and where you choose. iView's free and all too easy to use.
Towel, please, Charlie.
Hey, you're watching my show. This one's a classic.
Think of your attitude of Hasbros before Hashos.
Always with you. Always iView.
Reese Holter is my guest. Reese, I've got a text here, which is an interesting point. It says, Reese, if we're doing so much damage to the oceans, why has Sydney Harbour and the Parramatta River are rejuvenated over the last 20 years? And, Reese, is this because, and it's probably not only there, but there... Oh, he's not back yet. Oh, we're seeing if we can get him back again. We've got some problems with Reese. But it's an interesting point because I wonder whether places like the Parramatta River and the Sydney Harbour, there was so much damage done before and we've recognised that and we're trying to fix it. Reese, that's what the text says. We've done damage to this. I mean, why is it the Sydney Harbour and Parramatta River are rejuvenating? Is that because, and we'll see it in a lot of areas, we've seen a lot of damage done, we've recognised our mistakes and we're trying to make them better?
Yes, absolutely. And as for water, the 411 is, Australians are so wonderful. They lead the world in so many different cutting edge ways. In Sydney and Melbourne, Sydney in particular, they realize that all the storm water that goes from the gutter was emptying directly into the ocean. They've got these big spin centrifuges. So when the water now runs down just before the ocean, it's spinning and collecting all this crap. When we stop polluting, nature has an immediate effect of beginning to regenerate. She's a powerful lady, but we've got to back off. I wanted to say, you talked about water. 2 days ago, there was an epic situation that happened in Chile. In a matter of 12 hours, parts of Chile received 3 years worth of rain. It rained so hard, Trevor, that the city of Santiago, 4.5 million people, their entire water system shut down. They had no drinking water for 4.5 million people.
God.
We've got to be really careful now.
if you'd like to join us, as David has. David, good morning.
Oh, hi, Trev. Hi, Rhys. Yeah, gee, lots to talk about. Actually, that thing about what Rhys mentioned about the Australia Post using drones or quadcopters to deliver mail, that was on the ABC News not so long ago.
Oh, okay.
And the Elizabeth Key one too. Yeah, there was going to be a triathlon here in Perth, and they were to swim in Elizabeth Key, and they had to call it off because they said the E. coli content in the water was too high.
Hey, David, did the cut work in Mandurah?
The what?
When they put the cut in Mandurah?
I'm not at Mandurah. I'm at Rockingham. But anyway, the one that came to mind was when I heard on Radio National, it's about the cruise ships that come into Sydney, and in the peak of the season, there'd be four or five of them docked in Sydney at Balmain or thereabouts, and they keep their diesel engines idling to keep electricity to the ships. The reason being they don't have a plug-in earth-based electricity supply, and a local mother's group, two dozen or so of them, had babies, and they noticed all the babies were getting sick at the time the cruise ships were there. And it was the diesel particulates from the cruise ships.
Pump out masses of diesel.
Sorry?
They pump out masses of fumes.
Yeah, and when you've got four or five of them there at one time for 3 days at a time, and they use the worst type of diesel fuel possible.
Yeah, you see, this is because it's ending with diesel fuel fumes and diesel, because I've just got diesel written on the text, on the information thing in front of me here, David, because they've come a long way as far as diesel cars are concerned. Mm. And diesel trucks for reduction of fumes, but not necessarily, obviously, with ships.
Yeah, but the problem was the Sydney City Council should provide them. If they want those cruise ships, they should provide them with earth-based plug-in electricity so they can turn their engines.
It just seems obvious, doesn't it, Royce?
Yes, and I want to just skewer a little thing. There's a certain car company that hasn't come as far as they had told planet Earth they'd come. I was careful.
No, you can say Volkswagen and you can say that company because it's very well known that they...
It, not me. I don't want to get in strife.
No. Well, because it's been so well documented what Volkswagen did in claiming basically breaking the law.
Lower emissions. Lower emissions. But for the big cruise liners, there isn't any reason on Earth that they aren't covered, the top of them, with solar panels, or B, when they pull into ports, that the ports aren't sourcing their energy from the sun, because in most, if not all, the places they pull into port, they're sun rich. Hello.
Yeah, they spend all their time out there in the sun.
Oh, yeah.
It's just bizarre.
I mean, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah. Bobby, good morning.
Yeah, mate, how are you?
Good, Bobby.
Yeah, mate, I was an engineer on ships, and at one stage I couldn't get a job as an engineer on Australian ships because they were getting rid of all the Australian ships, thanks to Mr. Howard and Mr. Abbott. But I got a job on a flag convenience ship, and before we got into Sydney, the chief engineer told me to go dump the rubbish over the wall. And I said, the Australian ships don't do that. And he said, well, if you don't want to do it, he said, get a job somewhere else. So what I think should happen is that I think now, because there's only about four Australian ships left on the coast, and when I got out in 94, there was about 200. But what I think should happen now is I think that somebody in the government should be checking these ships to see exactly how much they're paying for to be dumped when they get inside Sydney Harbour, because they're dumping it all out at sea just before you see land. And that there's tremendous amount of rubbish on ships. And Australian seamen would never, ever dump rubbish over the side.
See, this is what's... Thank you, Bobby, because it's such a good point. This is the need for regulations, and regulations are in place in countries to make sure that countries from overseas are sticking to the same regulations.
Yeah, and I put it one better. Here's a terrific science project for year 10 all over Australia. You give those science classes at every school the GPS of all the boats that are, all the cargo ships that are serving Australia. And those ships, and when they do dump, they need to be reported. Because here's the thing, The only thing that's going to correct all of these injustices to my friend and our life-giver nature are laws. And the lawmakers in most countries are voted in by the people. So I hear people say, oh, you know, mate, I can't do anything. I'm a little person. And I say, we are all powerful. We can all vote. And if we don't like the lawmakers, then we all vote the lawmaker, current lawmakers, OUT.
David joins us. Good morning, David. You there, David? No, he might have gone to get a cup of tea. Good morning, Scott.
How you going, sir?
Yeah, Scott.
It's all about money sometimes, too.
Oh, I think it's all about money nearly all the time, Scott.
You're right. Because Port Geograph, where I live in Busman, like, it was a beautiful area, beautiful beach, everything, and they decided to make a Port Geograph out of it. You know what the story is. There's always seaweed there. They've wrecked the joint. They really have.
Scott, I mean, Bruce will probably agree. I think it is all about money. It's not some of it's about money. It's all about money.
Look, whether or not what you do in life, it's all about money.
Yeah, I mean, it's whether it's saving money, whether it's making money. It all has to do with money in some way, Ruth.
Yeah, but you know what? Here's what I want to put to the listeners. How about this? What about the compassionate gene? What about the gene that wants to help other people? And I'm going to take it two steps further. Today, because I'm showing my age, today, respect and manners. Mate, it goes hand in hand. The more people make, the more they're entitled to, they think, and the harder my friend, our supporter, nature cops it.
Bruce, but along with that, it's just short-sighted to think that it's making money or saving money, because in the long run, it probably doesn't do either. Because the effects on the environment and the effects that it has on the planet is going to cost us money in the long run.
Yeah, well, here's what we do know. First of all, the pharaohs tried, but they couldn't take the riches with them. Second of all, the first trillionaire, well, he or she won't be able to take it with them. Prince or pauper, we all breathe air, we all drink water, and we all eat food. It comes from nature. And so far, the wealthiest person, whoever it may be, has not figured how to buy a rocket ship, go to outer space, and return. NASA can take us to Mars. Here's the 411. They can't bring us home. This is our only planet. And it's about time that we protect our planet because it gives us everything. And I want to further add to that. Here's my gripe. Everybody says, oh, when I get to heaven, I'm going to be X, Y, and Z. We're living in heaven. Earth is heaven. There's not one person who's sanctimonious who would go to heaven and litter, Trevor. So why is it that people throw rubbish on the ground, in the air, in the water, right now on heaven? Think about that.
I got this text last time you're on, and I've got a couple this one. What does 411 mean?
Oh, that's information. No, that's a Seppo thing. If you dial in the old days, God, I'm really showing my age. If you dial 411, that's like you get an operator that says, hello, can I help you? But today today we're so clever. You know, people are becoming redundant.
I'm glad you told us because I didn't know what a 411 was as well, so thank you.
There'll be no postal people.
Ivan, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Trevor. Again, I spoke to you a few days ago. Look, there's just so much. Now, we're suffering from a plague of extra people here the politicians and the corporations seem to want. Now, when you think of bringing people in from areas where their carbon dioxide consumption or production is one unity, you bring them here and it goes immediately to 15-16, and of course everything's got to be provided for them. There's vast areas around Melbourne that the last few years I've seen changed from farming land, which
absorbs carbon dioxide into eroded catchments. And, of course, also all these people need water. Now, a past government has put in a vastly expensive desalination plant. Now, what's the energy cost in this? A lot of our energy comes from coal. From a couple of different credible sources. I used to work for CSIRO, and my boss, who's sort of in retirement now, I've referred to him quite often too. The conversion rate from coal to consumable water is about 4 tonne of coal for a tonne of water.
Yeah.
Now, how long does that 1,000 litres of water last an immigrant family? 2 days, if they're lucky.
Ivan, look, thank you. I've got to move on, but the desalination plants is an interesting one, Reece. As in Australia, we find ourselves short of water, and desalination plants have become one of the ways of dealing with that. The thing is, though, that they use up massive amounts of energy.
Well, and Trev, and they spit the brine back into the sea, and what happens? It kills the sea life, right? No, this is not an easy fix. We have to be very, very careful. But here's the thing. If we look at the desert and how life in the desert thrives carefully with water, we can mimic that. There's nothing a human can't do except pollute.
And that use of land is a program in itself. Where I live, there's a whole stack of farming land that is now being taken up by housing. And as we sprawl into areas, we take up so much of our good farming land. But that's a conversation for another time. Ian, good morning.
Good morning, Trevor and Reece. My question to you guys was, India and China are now becoming two of the most major air polluters through coal-fired power stations. Now, when we in the West are critical to them and say, you know, you should do something about it, their response, especially from India, is that, you know, you guys are hypocrites. We're trying to build our nations up and get people out of poverty. And frankly, you guys did it through the use of coal, so why shouldn't we? So how do we answer that, or what do we do about it?
And I'll just go to Reece on this as well. Aren't India and China, though, now starting to recognise that they need to be doing more as far as polluting as well as concerned, Reece?
China is, as I said at the top of the show, with 4,400 people expiring each day from air pollution, yes. And when they burn at these coal-fired power plants, they need water to spin the turbines, which they don't. Yes, they have come to realize, but we're talking the sheer enormity of 1.4 billion humans. India is much farther behind. At 1.1 billion people, they are trying to claw their way out of abject poverty in many areas. To answer the question of the caller, the way we deal with this is we deal through leadership. And what we don't do, ladies and gentlemen, we do not greenlight the Adani, Carmichael, and the Shenhua Watermark new coal mines. I just want the listeners to know this, that if we take those two coal deposits from the rich Liverpool farmlands in New South Wales and part of the Galilee coal basin in Queensland, if we burn the coal in those two deposits alone, we will exceed 1C by burning just those two coal mines. The word ecocide is being investigated at the tribunal for Monsanto. It's a mock tribunal at The Hague in October. Should the word ecocide be adopted, which is the destruction of nature, I suggest that government officials in the Environment Ministry will be tried for ecocide, for greenlighting new coal mines.
Ian, can I also say, Reece, I'm not sure how much coal we provide to India and China, but perhaps if we don't provide coal to India and China, then that is actually discouraging the use of coal. And maybe we should be doing a lot more in the exporting of information and trying to encourage or support other industries within those countries. Japan have done it very well as far as the as solar energy is concerned.
So of CSIRO, by the way. Newcastle CSIRO in 2014 were the first human beings on planet Earth to discover supercritical steam from a solar thermal power station. These are solar stations with mirrors all around them. They collect the heat of the sun. The sun then boils a water-like substance, which generates steam through tiny little openings that spin a turbine and is comparable with the energy released from coal. For heaven's sake, this is a world game changer. Trevor?
Reese, it's always a pleasure talking to you on the program, and we'll look forward to doing it again soon.
Thank you a million.
Dr. Reese Holter joining us as we take a look at the environment. We like to do that every now and then, which is a good thing.